Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And so we want to look tonight at obstacles and tests. And we're often told that Krishna wants us back to Godhead more than we want to go back. Yes? Prabhupada often says that. He's more anxious to get us back. So it would seem that if Krishna is so anxious to have us with him, that we should just be able to say, okay, Krishna, I want to be there. I want to be your devotee. And that would be it, right? It would be easy. Did he just make everything easy for us? But does that always happen? No. So I'm going to look at why and what we can do about it, how we can respond. So I'd like, this is at least a somewhat interactive workshop, fun shop. And so I'd like to ask all of you, first of all, what do we mean by an obstacle? What kind of things would be obstacles in our spiritual life? Could someone give some examples? Oversleep. I'll just repeat what everybody says, Jen, last week. Oversleeping. Okay. Something else? Our various internal anarthas. Okay. Something else? The tricks of the mind. Okay. Greed. Very good. Yes. Excellent. Yes. Hypocrisy. Woohoo. Okay. Aparadha. Making offenses. Something else. What else? There's obstacles. Distractions, like too much media. It used to be really simple, right? I remember many years ago, people would come to me and say, what do I do about the TV? I said, well, you go to the back, and there's this cord, and you follow it to the wall, and you pull it out, and then you throw the thing out the window. And you can't tell people that anymore, because now they have a little thing in their pocket and so forth. Okay, so distractions like media, and what else? What are some more other obstacles? Our attachments to various things. Yeah, it could be things, it could be habit, some other obstacles. Fault finding and criticizing. Whoa. Yes. Health issues. And I was just recently talking to some devotee who told me, yeah, you know, this person I know, they were a really fixed up devotee and then they had terrible health issues and now they've become an atheist. Yeah. Okay, other obstacles. Yes. Oh, old age. What, you're saying something in English? Okay, so disease, old age. You want your body to move, it doesn't move. Yes. Unfavorable family members. And for many people, that's a huge obstacle. It's interesting, you know, here in America, we often think about joining the movement and your parents oppose, or maybe your spouse. When I was preaching in China, where a lot of people who join are elderly, they had difficulty with their adult children. And especially the children would complain that their parents were no longer making offerings to the ancestors. And it was a big thing for them. You know, you're not making offerings to the ancestors anymore. What's going to happen? Our whole family's not going to, you know, we're not going to be in heaven. Okay. So where do these obstacles come from? As we said, if Krishna wants us to go back to Godhead, What's the source of these obstacles? Why are they even there? So in one sense, we can say that there's only one source of these obstacles, and that's ourselves. Because after all, if we wanted to be Krishna conscious, we'd be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says in the first canto, the unhappy materialist can get out simply by, anybody know that purport? Prabhupada says the need of the soul is freedom. And he says, the unhappy materialist can get out simply by, anybody know? Desiring to do so, just simply by desiring to do so. So these obstacles are really created ultimately by ourselves, but we could look at three different sources. One is our specific actions. So I've done something specifically wrong, which has given me a specific reaction and created an obstacle in my spiritual life. A very specific action and reaction. Like some of you said, you know, offenses. So I've offended a devotee and that's put a block in my spiritual life, right? Or I've developed some bad habit that's put a block in my spiritual life. Then there's just kind of generally the material nature. Have you noticed that? Like you said, old age. You know, even if you don't offend anybody and you don't have any bad habits, unless you die young, you get old, yes? And for most people, old age is not particularly pleasant, at least in most ways. There are a few nice things about getting old, but generally not so much. And it's something like, you know, if you commit a crime, you get a particular sentence. You have to be in jail for whatever it is, 20 years, and you're in a particular prison. So there's a reaction related to your specific crime, and then there's just sort of the general misery of being in prison, huh? With the other prisoners and all the rules and that kind of thing. Now, that's caused by your specific crime, but the difficulties are not specific to your crime. Does everybody follow that? Okay. So there's some stuff we go through in this world that's not really specific to our actions. I mean, it's a little hubris to think that every time it rains, it's because of my specific karma. You follow what I'm saying? Like the whole universal weather is all about me. And then there's also, surprisingly enough, Krishna may sometimes do things that appear to us to be obstacles. But we can think of it something like this. Let's say a person becomes addicted to some intoxicant. They're an alcoholic, they're a heroin addict, or something like that. And they go into a treatment center, and the doctor prescribes some treatment which involves some pain and difficulty. So is that difficulty caused by the doctor or by the patient? Ultimately by the patient. So even though on the immediate level it's caused by the doctor, it's only caused by the doctor in response to improper choices by the patient. So for those people who are already pure devotees, who are already in the spiritual world, the only obstacles are in play, yes? Then the spiritual world, there's so-called obstacles just as part of the lila, where Krishna doesn't show up on time, right? You understand? Or there's some rivalry between the gopis or something from the husband, or, you know, but that's all play. It's not actual obstacles. So even if it seems that it's Krishna who's doing this to us, and Krishna so-called putting in an obstacle, ultimately, again, it's in response to our behavior. So I've also thought quite deeply about obstacle or test, and maybe this is a little bit of a subjective difference. But many times devotees will ask, well, when I'm facing this difficulty in my life, am I supposed to kind of like be really determined to take this difficulty? Well, this is just a test of my determination, and I should just push through it, and I should just, you know, go through it. Or is it a sign that I should make some change in direction in my life? Do you all follow the difference? You know, if there's a blockade on your road, am I supposed to drive through the blockade, or am I supposed to take a detour? What are you supposed to do? So I'm just going to tell you my own personal formula, which I found to be very helpful. I don't know if you'll find it helpful. And that is, well, is there a way to get through the blockade at all? Just like Prahlad Maharaj, his father was torturing him. That's a pretty bad obstacle. Like you mentioned about family members. So generally, we don't have family members that try to kill us if we chant Hare Krishna. I think of, you know, Hiranyakashipu was like the original child abuser in the universe. But what could Prahlad do? You know, there was no Lila Sutra to him. There was no CPO. You understand? There was no police. He was in charge of the police. Like Haridas Thakur, he's being beaten on the order of the government. Where do you go? You all follow what I'm saying? There wasn't any other recourse. Or, you know, what do you do if it's not just some temporary disease? Well, what do you do if the doctor says, okay, it's terminal? You have 2 weeks to live. I mean, there are certain obstacles you just can't get through. What if the really difficult person is your six-year-old child? You know, sometimes the obstacles and difficulties in our life are simply not one that we can overcome. There's no amount of determination, and you just simply can't. And then sometimes we can say, well, I can go through this obstacle. And then the question that I would ask is, but what is the cost? What is the cost? You know, is it legal? Is your way of counteracting the obstacle legal? Is it moral? Is it ethical? Is it spiritual? I was once in a temple where a devotee was doing a big Food for Life program, and he wanted to expand. He wanted to make it also a homeless shelter, but he didn't have the funds. So I thought, okay, I'll go to the government and ask them for the funds. So the government said, well, we can give you the funds, but you can't make it a Hare Krishna homeless shelter. You have to let people eat and smoke cigarettes and have illicit sex in the shelter, you know, anything. And because he so much wanted the money for the shelter, he went ahead anyway. He said, oh, you know, this, but he should have really changed course, you understand? Or sometimes we may have some obstacle in our life, and the only way to get through it is to just work, you know, 16, 18 hours a day, give up our japa, give up our hearing, give up our everything. So if that's the kind of cost we have to pay to get through the obstacle, if we have to do something that's illegal, immoral, unethical, or spiritually harmful, then we can see, okay, this is not something that I push through. And I see that sometimes we're talking about Krishna-created obstacles. Sometimes Krishna seems to put up these things as a way to say, hey, go a different way. Hey, go a different way. And one example I like to give to people, how does Krishna get his cows to go from one place to another? What does he do? He plays his flute. What else does he do? How else does Krishna get his cows to go from one place to another? He calls them by their name. How does he do that? You know how he counts their name? He has what? He has Jaffa beads. Yeah, isn't that cool? What are they made out of? What's Krishna's Jaffa beads made out of? Jewels, yeah. And he's calling the names of the different groups of cows on his Jaffa beads made out of jewels. Wouldn't that be a nice way to be called? Right, when the cows and goats and buffalo were all in the forest fire, and Krishna comes and he's calling them by name, and they answer and they come out of the fire. So Krishna calls his cows by name, he plays his flute. How else does he get his cows to move from one place to another? He also has a what? He has a horn? Okay, what else? He's got a stick. He also has what? Sometimes he keeps it on his turban. A rope. So he calls them by name. He's got a flute. He's got a horn. He's got a rope. He's got a stick. So what would you like him to bring out to get you from one place to another? The jewel or your name on the jewels, right? So one thing that we can do if we want to reduce obstacles in our life is as soon as we hear that little whisper of our name that Krishna's calling on his jewel Jaffa beads, we can move. We can change something in our life. And this is something, if we make this a principle, let me just try to hear that little, you know, the flute sound and my name on the Jaffa beads or the bugle, you know, that's a little louder, right? A little bit more insistent. Krishna's buffalo horn, and not wait till he gets out the rope and the stick. And I find, just like any of us, you know, any of us who work with kids or with any employees or whatever, if generally speaking, we like to take the least, most moderate action first, isn't it? Right? Most people. I mean, some people shoot an atom bomb first thing, but generally, we try to be a little subtle in the beginning. So Krishna is also like that. And many times what appears to us as a big obstacle is simply we didn't listen. We weren't receptive. When Krishna just whispered in the heart, hey, don't do that. And then it has to come to some other devotee coming and saying, Prabhu, I think you have a problem. And then pretty soon it's a whole meeting, right? With the whole temple board or whatever. And then there's an article on the internet and so forth and so on. So if there's something that we really can't go through, see, what is Krishna just speaking to me? So I want to look now at the purposes. What is the purpose? How can we use these obstacles and tests? How can we respond to them in such a way that actually brings us closer to Krishna? Because Prabhupada writes in the purport to 6.4.27-28 that being pleased with the devotee, the Lord turns all his material impediments into spiritual service. Isn't that nice? Turns his material impediments into spiritual service. Wow. So, I was a Gurukul teacher for many years, and one of the things that we would teach kids to do is how to write properly. So there's a way to hold your pen or pencil, and I don't have a pencil with me, but just kind of pretend I'm holding a pencil, and you're holding it like this. And if you hold your pencil like this, then you can write for a longer period of time without your hand getting tired. But most parents, when their kids start writing at about, you know, 1-2 years old, they don't pay much attention to how their kids are holding the pencil. They're just happy the kids are coloring and happy and they're leaving them alone. So you get the kids coming into school and they're holding the pencil, you know, this way and all kinds of ways. And a lot of times you just say to the kid, well, just do it like this, and they listen. But some kids don't. So for the kids who are really struggling, we would get a little thing made out of rubber or plastic that you just kind of put on the pencil, and it has grooves in it that you can put your fingers in that will hold your fingers in the right place. You all follow? So some of the kids, when you give them that, they're really cooperative and they use it. Now, if they use it and they form the right habits, what will you do with the thing that's on the pencil? You'll remove it. Right? And this is what I've seen over and over again with the devotees, and we see this also in the Shastra, that when the devotee responds properly to some sort of test or difficulty in their life, when they learn how to use it properly, it goes away. Or it no longer appears to that person as a problem. They no longer feel it to be an impediment. But then you have some kids who you put this thing on their pencil and they hate it. What do you think they do? They take it off. Of course, then you notice they take it off and you put it right back on. What else do you think they do? Huh? They use it as a weapon. Okay, throw it across the room. What else do you think they do? Chew on it, wreck it. Okay, what else? They may throw a tantrum. Yes, I'm not going to use this on my pencil. Okay, what else might they do? Oh, very good. You know, I give this example over and over. You're the first person who ever figured that out. But that was one of the most common ways that the kids would deal with it. They keep it on their pencil. So, you know, because if they took it off or threw it or something, you just give them another one. So they keep it on it, but they put their hand above it or below it instead of using it. And another trick some kids would do is they would have two pencils, one with it on and one with it off, and they would switch whenever they thought you weren't looking. So this is often how we try to respond to these difficulties put in our life, isn't it? We just get angry at Krishna. Why is this difficulty in my life? You don't love me. And we just try to get rid of it in some way, right? Or we try to go around it and over it, and instead of trying to understand the purpose behind it. Now, this thing we put on the pencil, the child perceives it as an obstacle. Some of the children, not all of them. And those children perceive it as something not very nice that the teacher is doing to them. But what is it really? Is the teacher really giving them an obstacle? No. Exactly the opposite. The teacher is trying to help them and give them something to aid them in their life. All right, so I'm going to look at several different purposes and our responses to it. I don't at all pretend that this is an exhaustive list, right, or the only way to look at it. I'm sure everybody here could come up with different answers and different responses, but I hope there'll be something here that you'll find helpful. So one purpose can be to get us detached from illusion, to change something in our behavior, our thoughts, or our feelings. Something that we're doing that is attaching us in this world. And like Lord Brahma says, Tatenu Kampam Sukshimichimano, that when difficulties come, instead of thinking, well, why me? I don't deserve this. I'm such a great person. Right? Am I the only one who's thought like that? You know, and I remember thinking things like, yeah, I'm chanting my 16 rounds. I'm going to Mangalartik. I'm following the regular principles. Why is this happening to me? But maybe the difficulty is to make some shift. And I see that sometimes it may be a shift that we've been resisting for a very, very, very long time. And for me, the visual of it is, it's like you get put in this circular room with only one way out. And maybe that way out is to develop compassion. Maybe that way out is develop humility. And I was speaking with a devotee who said, yeah, you know, I'm helping so-and-so, and he's a good devotee, but he just can't be self-reflective. He's just never able to look in his heart and see his own stuff. And I know we can look at other people and often see, wow, if this person would just be a little humble, or if this person would just be a little responsible. You follow what I'm saying? Or maybe if this person would just smile at other people sometimes. You know, and often we can see in other people, well, there's this one thing. It can be a really simple thing, too. It doesn't always have to be a huge thing. Sometimes we think that to make a big change, we have to do a big change. But I give the example, you know, you have two parallel lines. One of them moves a milliliter, and it's all the way over there. So sometimes just a little milliliter of change can make a huge, huge difference. I mean, I was going through many years ago a lot of problems with another devotee. And all I had to do was whenever I talked to this devotee, say, it's so nice to talk to you. I'm so glad you're my friend. Thank you for calling. That was all I had to do. And then my problems with this devotee vanished. Just a little bit of change. But it was an internal change of some compassion. Do you understand what I'm saying? I had this once also with a student. I had a student that was really, really annoying. And I had been told by one of my mentors, never teach a child you don't like. And at a certain point, I realized that I genuinely did not like this child. And then I was in a quandary, because you can't go to the parents and say, please take this child out of my school because I don't like him. You know, that's not a valid reason. And I was really stuck. And the kid was genuinely annoying. So I thought, okay, what am I going to do? I have this difficulty. It was really a difficulty. So then every time the kid came up to me, pestering me about this or that, and he would really pester, I would again just say, oh, it's so nice to see you. Thank you for coming up to my desk. And I'll tell you, the first few days I did it, it was all an act. I didn't feel it even slightly. But gradually, as I started dealing like that with him, first of all, he didn't bother me so much anymore. I mean, internally, it didn't bother, his behavior didn't bother me so much anymore. And gradually, his pestering also stopped. And then I saw also gradually the other kids started treating him more nicely also. So sometimes you have this huge obstacle in your life, and just a little bit of shift with how you think about things, how you talk to people, how you deal with things, can change everything. And sometimes it can change everything very quickly. You know, sometimes even with your body. You know, one devotee I know got into a bad motorcycle accident in India, punctured her lung, and she said, you know, I'm just always in pain, pain, pain. I said, you know, every time your mind says pain, why don't you think healing, healing, healing? She called me the next day. She said, you know, I'm feeling a lot better. And sometimes it's just that kind of a shift. You know, just that kind of a shift. Well, I have this going on, this going on, this going on, this. Well, can you see something else in it? Can you deal with it in a little different way? Right? Yeah. Can you go a little deeper into it? There's the story, it's a true story, of this man who went to eat at a restaurant and the waitress botched his order, you know, brought the wrong thing, spilled the water, and he was like, ah, I'm not going to leave her any tip. And then he overheard some of the waitresses speaking and said, oh, you know, poor Kathy, your husband died a couple days ago, and she's got 5 kids to take care of, and she hasn't been able to take time off of work. And then his whole perspective changed. And we can change our perspective about things going on with ourselves, with other people, with things in our environment, and this little kind of shift like that. There's a nice quote in Krishna book, chapter 89, one of Radhanaswami's favorite quotes. He says, one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. Now, this tolerance doesn't mean I am tolerating this provoking situation. Because, as you all know, if we do that, what happens? We explode, don't we? Sometimes you see parents dealing like this with children. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Stop that! You know, and we've seen this sort of behavior. I saw a marriage break up in something like this. You know, the family was a good friend of ours, and the husband came to us and said, you know, I don't understand. My wife wants to leave me after 10 years of marriage. We were always happy. We never had an argument. And I talked to her, and she says, you know, I've been saving up all these arguments. And then she exploded one day with 10 years worth of arguments. So that's not what we mean by tolerating. What we mean by tolerating is that the situation genuinely doesn't bother you anymore. Because you redefined it. You're dealing with it in a different way. You're responding to it in a different way. And often we don't even think like that. We just think, I have to change the situation rather than I have to change my response to the situation. Now, one very interesting quote, which is kind of heavy, is from the 11th canto, 12th chapter, verses 1 to 2, where it says that Madhvacharya is quoted from the Vedic literature that if one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, Lord Vishnu personally places barriers in the path of such a person so that he may not enter into the Lord's company. Whoa. So our obstacles may be there. Sometimes we see this. I don't know if you've ever noticed this. Sometimes people who are really disrespectful and offensive with devotees, and it goes on and on and on and on and on, they end up getting a house really far away. Did you notice that? And I remember one devotee who did that and came and said, oh, we found this great house. Oh, where is it? Oh, it's about a 14-hour drive from any other devotee. And Krishna will sometimes intentionally, Madhvacharya says, put obstacles in our path if we just refuse to deal with others nicely. So sometimes these obstacles are ways for us to adjust our own mentality. Now, a very specific way of adjusting our own mentality is, well, this is a little, it's a little hard to talk about, I suppose. But, you know, I really liked the idea of the law of karma when I came to Krishna consciousness. It just explains so many things about the world. But I think it's hard to internalize that and say the law of karma applies to me, right? At least that's my experience. My experience is I can look at you and I can see why you're suffering. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, I can see why you're getting that. You're like this and like that. But when stuff comes to me, I say, me? I'm a good person. I don't do that. So one day I decided that I was going to look a little deeper into this matter and thought, all right, well, so Krishna says, well, Lord Brahma says, karmadini yudhahati king kuchabhakti bhajam. And Krishna says, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshi shyami masu chaha. So I think if I've taken up Krishna consciousness, then I'm probably not suffering some reaction from something 200 lifetimes ago. Because we tend to think about this with karma. Okay, well, I'm getting a reaction to something, but it's something I did so long ago in such another lifetime, way back there. You know, I'm really not that kind of person anymore. Whatever that was. I mean, I must have done something really nasty, but as a different person. Well, that's kind of interesting. Anyone have any idea what the purpose of karma is? Yes? Yes, to reform that desire to enjoy separately. What do you think very specifically? To give us what? Huh? To purify us. But in what way? To give us what? Compassion. Why would the person who kills a cow have to take birth as a cow and be killed? There was a famous psychic, Edgar Casey, who said, karma is meeting yourself. As one place where Prabhupada says, you foolish person, don't you know that you're never really hurting anyone else, you're only hurting yourself? So karma is to give us compassion. We end up experiencing what we've done to others. Do you know people who have near-death experiences, that when they get this life review, they say that they relive their life through the emotions of the other people? They experience how they affected other people emotionally? That's why we don't have compassion with them. We think that others are objects, kind of. We don't really understand that they have feelings like us. Like Krishna says in the sixth chapter, the yogi sees everyone according to his own happiness and distress. So anyway, it occurred to me that what I was getting back, if really my past karma is being erased, because, I mean, if you were a meat eater before and you come to Krishna consciousness, now you have empathy, so you don't have to take birth as a cow and get killed, right? Isn't that a fact? You've already developed the empathy for the cow. You don't need to go through the punishment. So I thought, if I'm suffering something now, well, that must mean I must be doing something now. And that was quite a revolutionary idea. But okay, well, that must mean that what's coming to me now, especially from other people, must be something that I'm giving out now. So again, I kind of accepted this intellectually, theoretically. I didn't really accept it quite emotionally and internally. But I thought, all right, if I accept it theoretically, if I accept that it's true, then let's see. So at that time, I was in a community where I was running a school, and we would sometimes have meetings of the leaders of the community to decide on different things, and sometimes I was in those meetings, sometimes I wasn't. If they thought they were going to decide something that had nothing to do with me, then they wouldn't invite me. But you know what it is at meetings. Sometimes things would come up in the meetings that weren't planned. So occasionally, the temple president would call me up and say, oh, Armila, I'm really sorry. You know, this thing came up in the meeting, and it affects you, and it affects your school. And I would say, well, if that happens, why don't you call me? Or why don't you table it and have another meeting a week later and invite me? Or do something so that I can be involved, because it's not very good if you make these decisions that affect my life without consulting with me. And so the temple president would say, you know, you're right. and I'm really sorry, and we'll do it next time. And what do you think would happen? It would happen again. It happened probably about 3 or 4 times a year. Now, especially when there's something recurring like that, right? And when this would happen, I would think, I don't do that. I don't make decisions about people's life without consulting with them. I just don't do that. I'm consistent. So when I looked at this, you know, I was really thinking about that this thing, that these obstacles I may be creating by something I'm doing now. So I prayed in the evening, and I said, Krishna, I'm going to accept, at least in theory, I'm going to accept at least provisionally, that whatever I'm getting back, I must be giving out. So please show me how I am making decisions about people's lives without consulting with them. And then I forgot about it. Do you ever do that? Do you ever make a prayer and then you forget about it? You just forget that you prayed it, and I went to sleep. So next morning I got up, I went to the temple, and somehow, I don't do this every day, I must admit. But anyway, that day before japa, I was really praying to Radharani. I was thinking about that verse, how if you chant and your heart doesn't melt, it must be made of steel. And that's due to offenses. So I was really praying to Radharani, please, 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 any devotee that I've offended, please, any devotee that I've offended, let it be rectified, let it be rectified, let it be rectified, so I can really chant in ecstasy. And I was chanting all my 16 rounds like that. And I was good. I chanted all my 16 rounds all at one time. Janmasthami Prabhu, you can make a note of it. I don't do that every day, though. So anyway, I had to leave the temple early that day. And so right after the program, before they got to serve prasadam, I stopped down at the kitchen and I asked the cook, I said, can I get a plate of prasadam? And the cook said to me, there's something been bugging me the whole time I've been cooking breakfast, and I really want to tell you, but I don't know if I should tell you. I really feel kind of uncomfortable about this, and I don't know. And I said, no, tell me, it's okay. And of course, that person didn't know that I had been praying that morning. And the cook said, well, about a year ago, you really offended a friend of mine, and that's why she hasn't been at the temple much for about a year. Really? I offended somebody that much that they didn't want to come to the temple for about a year? I said, oh, thank you very much. And I'm not sure how surprised the other person was, but I was thankful. Anyway, I went back to my house and I immediately called this person. And I said, you know, your friend told me that I offended you a year ago, and I don't even know what I did. I don't remember what I did. Can you tell me what I did? And she said, well, you know, you were going to go help out with the birth. So I've been what's called a doula, where you help out with in labor. I probably helped deliver about 50 babies. She said, you're going to help out with the birth, and I was going to come too, and you told the mother not to have me come. And I did do that. I felt that this lady had kind of an intense energy about her, and I'd gone to the mother, and I said, yeah, I don't think she's a good person to have at the birth. I don't think she's going to be able to be, like, mellow enough at the birth. And she said, did you talk to me about it before you talked to the mother? And I said, well, no, I didn't. I just talked to the mother. And then you know what she said to me, right? She said, why did you make a decision about my life without consulting with me first? And I just sat there and went, oh my God. And since then, I've seen over and over and over again that this is real stuff. That the stuff that I'm getting back, I am putting out. Now, not always. Sometimes when people mistreat you, it's another message. It's a message to be compassionate, or it's a message to move to another temple to change your service. I mean, it may be a different message. But in my very, very unscientific, very anecdotal experience with myself and thousands of other devotees who come to me about this or that, about 80-85% of the time, if the obstacle is some interpersonal thing, try that. Say to Krishna, how am I doing this? And it may be with a very different person. You know, I did this with a very different person than was doing it back to me, and in a very different context. And I find that Krishna will really show you this stuff. I had it in one place in Europe, one temple president who was really complaining about how his GBC man treated him. And I mentioned this principle to him, and the next day he came to me and he said, oh, I've been treating the devotees in the temple the way my GBC person has been treating me. I know another person who was upset with how their Sankirtan leader was treating them, and then realized they were treating their mother like that. So, it may be some, and it may be in a little different form. Okay, it may be in a little different form. Somebody may be irresponsible with me by being late, and I may be irresponsible by leaving my dirty clothes on the floor. But I'm giving out to someone else the same emotional pain that I'm getting back. So this is another way to see what is an obstacle. It may be a mirror that Krishna is putting up to me. And my dear friends, this is often so hard to accept. You know, we just find it so hard to accept that I could be that mean and that nasty and that irresponsible and that rude or that whatever. But it is often the case. And when we change that thing in ourselves, you know what? We stop getting it. We really do stop getting it. So that's a very big thing. Right? And we actually have this quote here, probably the one I was talking about. He said, "But you harm yourself because you're a rascal. You do not know what is your future. You do not harm others, but you are harming yourself. You do not know what you are and how you are harming yourself. You are such a rascal. You pose to be that you do not make any harm to anyone, but you are doing harm to yourself. You are such a fool. Nobody can do any harm to anyone. Everything is going on nature's law, but you are doing harm for your interest. You are such a fool." And this is what I've seen. When we so-called harm others, really what's happening is we're just having something ricochet back to ourselves. And when something comes back to ourselves, we should be asking. It's one of the first questions we should ask. You know, Krishna, what do you want me to learn from this? And am I putting this out? Now, another reason for an obstacle can be to develop an attachment to Krishna, to have real love for Krishna. And we talked about this a little bit in Bhagavatam class yesterday. This is also a very sensitive and difficult topic. And people usually argue about it, like they did yesterday. And that is that Krishna is the only shelter. 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 And often our obstacles come from having a false shelter. And my dear friends, we can have a lot of false shelters that look like Krishna. Like Rupa Goswami says, these weeds grow up alongside the bhakti creeper. And they're packed up tight with the bhakti creeper, and we can think they're the bhakti creeper. Yes, we take shelter of the devotees, but not like Krishna. It's Sakshat Hari Twaina. You worship the guru as good as God. But my dear friends, the guru is not God. You cannot go to your guru or any other devotee and say, Janaka Janani Daita Tanai Prabhu Guru Patituhu Sarvama. Can you say that? Can you go to a guru and say, you're my husband, you're my father, you're my lover, you're my son, you're my brother? He's going to run away. He's going to say, get me away from this crazy person. Or she. Right? Isn't it? And when we think that some other jiva can be our shelter like that, we were talking about this the other day, the Prabhupada says, the guru doesn't say, I am your best friend. The guru says, Krishna is your best friend. I am your best friend, he said, in the sense that I am introducing you to Krishna. I have seen people come to hate their spiritual masters because they thought their spiritual master would be God for them. I've seen people hate their husband or their wife or their kid, or their Sankirtan leader, or their temple president, because they thought, this person's going to meet all of my emotional needs. This person's going to know everything that's in my heart, meet all of my emotional needs, always be there for me. And only Krishna can do that. There's nobody else that can do that. The devotees are shelters in a different way. Not like that. And it can happen even with the institution. And so many sad stories of people who give their life to the institution. And when they don't get the reciprocation from the institution that they expect, which might mean from a temple president or GBCs or a group of GBCs or even just one of the devotees in the temple. I didn't get treated the way that I want. Then they become again angry, bitter, frustrated, and they leave. But maybe you were giving to the wrong thing. So we shouldn't exactly be serving the institution. We should be serving Krishna. We serve the institution because it pleases Krishna, not to please the institution exactly. And Prabhupada wrote a letter to one of my god sisters. He said, it's natural you want to serve your husband. You should serve your husband to please Krishna. And it's a small distinction. Do I serve my husband to please my husband, or do I serve my husband to please Krishna? Can you always please your husband? Is that possible? Right? You think, on Monday I'm going to make lasagna. It's his favorite dish. You make lasagna. He says, oh, great! So you make it again on Tuesday. And he says, 2 days in a row? It doesn't work. And then we become so hurt. Oh, I've given everything. Why are there these obstacles? So many times there are obstacles and pain and difficulty because we have the wrong shelter. Maybe we take our body as our shelter. Is our body a very good shelter? Anyone have a body who's like a really reliable shelter? What about our mind? Is our mind a good shelter? No. Other people? Or maybe animals? Maybe you have a little calf or a dog or I don't know, whatever. Are people or animals, are they good shelters? Sometimes. But reliably? Even if another person does their best, can they always be there for you? Exactly what you need? Can they say yoga kshema vaham yaham? Are things, our phone, our computer, our cars, our house, are they good shelters? So many, many times these obstacles come in our life because we have the wrong shelter. It's not my body, my mind, other jivas, or things that are going to fulfill me. They're not what's going to fulfill me. They can't. They don't have the capacity. Just like you have a little phone, right? It has a battery, but the battery on the phone, it can't light this room. It just doesn't have the capacity. So many, many times the obstacles come and the great disappointments in our life come because we have the wrong shelter. It's like you're trying to get roses from a hardware store. You know, it's just not there. And one has to, these obstacles can be a reminder. I need to go to Krishna. You know, when your body breaks down temporarily or long term, when your mind isn't doing what you want, a lot of you talked about obstacles in the mind. When the other people in your life aren't behaving in a way that's conducive to Krishna consciousness, when the things that you depend on to do your service in your life disappoint us. Instead of saying, well, I have to have this for my service. Krishna, don't I have to have a good working body for my service? You know, I have one god sister who's really been, as they say, unlucky in love. Hare Krishna, poor lady. And she said to me one day, but it says in the scriptures women should have good husbands. Don't I need a good husband? Like, well, how many times are you going to try? And we think, I have to have this. And therefore we see it as an obstacle. I have to have favorable family members. I have to have a working body. I have to have a mind that does what I want it to do. All the other devotees have to facilitate my service all the time. All my things have to work. But, you know, they were never our shelters. And Ahoituki Apikita, our relationship with Krishna is not dependent even on a working body. Or even on a working mind. I know some pretty amazingly surrendered devotees who do not have working minds. Like, their minds just don't work. It's broken. And they're still surrendered to Krishna. You can be a surrendered devotee even if, you know, all the people in your life are against you. What about the gopis who get locked in their houses? And even if all your things break, your car breaks, your computer breaks, whatever. So a lot of times these so-called obstacles, especially when we really react to them emotionally, negatively, it means I have the wrong shelter. Another use for obstacles is to show Krishna that we're not a fair-weather friend. Right? I had a friend years ago who said, Urmila, I'm always going to be there for you. And one time I called her up. I said, I have a doctor's appointment. My car just broke down. Can you please give me a ride? She said, oh, this is my day off. I'm just relaxing. I don't want to do anything. So that's not a friend, right? So Krishna wants to know what kind of friend we're going to be. In the 9 main processes of devotional service, one of them is sakya, friendship. That's not the friendship of the rasa. It's a practice that can be done by anyone. And the way it's explained is that I trust Krishna and Krishna can trust me. So a lot of times we grapple with, can I really trust Krishna? Is he really going to be there for me? Is he really going to maintain me? Is he really going to protect me? Do we ever ask the question, can Krishna trust me? What's Krishna saying about me? That Urmila, you know, can I really depend on her? Is she really going to be there for me? If I really need her, will she come? Or will she say, nah, it's my day off? So a lot of times these obstacles are there, and Krishna's saying, are you really a friend? Can I really count on you? I can't count how many different things devotees tell me that because of this or that or the other thing, there's no way I can chant 16 rounds every day. Are we a fair weather friend? And Krishna's going, come on, come on, we have our time together. Where are you? We have our appointment. And I was very blessed with a father who spent every morning with me before he went to work, from the time I was 2 till I went to college. Every morning, a couple hours, unless he was traveling. That was my daddy time. So we have our Krishna time. We have our time when we're not just doing things for Krishna and running around, but we're just with Krishna. We're just with Krishna with the deities. We're with Krishna with the holy name. We're with Krishna with the shastras. Are we dependable? Or do we say, oh, yeah. Well, this devotee yelled at me at the temple. My foot hurts. I'm too tired. And sometimes these obstacles of Krishna is looking and seeing. Are you going to be there for me? Can I depend on you? And another response to obstacles can be, and this is sort of related to shelter, but it's a little different. What's my motive? What's my motive? Why am I doing this service? Why am I doing this service? Am I doing this service to get something for myself, even really subtle? Am I doing this service just even to think, well, I'm such a good devotee, I do a lot of my service. I mean, am I doing the service to get the maha played? Am I doing the service? Everybody will say, jai, 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 you know. You distributed the most books. I remember really going through this as a mother of young children, right? When I distributed a lot of books, and they'd call me up, and Armila distributed 600 BTGs, jai. They'd give me the maha played. And the next day, if I didn't go out, right, nobody said, Armila changed, you know, 6 poopy diapers today. But there was no jais for that one. So, what are we doing our service for? Are we doing our service for the accolades? Are we doing our service for some kind of perk? Are we even doing our service just so we can think, I'm a good devotee. I'm a good devotee. I'm steady. I'm good. And by my steadiness and goodness, I am going to go back to Godhead. You know, what's driving us? And sometimes these obstacles are to have us introspect and say, what am I doing it for? I see that particularly happens when we don't get the fruit. You follow what I'm saying? You worked really hard for something for Krishna. For Krishna. It was for Krishna. And you didn't get the fruit. You planted the seed. You watered the seed. You weeded it, you know, the whole thing. And you went out there, you know, you're watching that mango, and it's getting ripe, and it's getting ripe, and it's getting right when you went to pick it, it's gone. You ever had that happen to you in your service? Are you trying to do some service for Krishna, and you're working for something, and you're working for something, and you do all this, and you get people to help you, and maybe even collect funds for it, and all this stuff, and it doesn't work. Or people are dissatisfied with it, or something, and then you just crush. Oh, what kind of an obstacle is this? All this endeavor, and it didn't work. Can you think of some devotees who worked really hard for Krishna, but it was a failure materially? Vishayu. He failed. On a material level, he failed. He didn't rescue Sita. Another example. Oh, because his help wasn't very meaningful? Okay, the little squirrel helping to build a bridge. Okay, I don't know if that's a failure, but I'd say it wasn't that meaningful. Materially. Okay, good example. Definitely, what Prabhupada did in Jhansi, and Prabhupada trying to preach in India, I'd say that externally that was a failure. Are we glad that was a failure, by the way? Yeah, I think we're, like, really glad. Okay, what else? Some other example? Yes. The wheels broke on the first Rath Yatra London. Okay, good. It was fine, right? Okay, so any examples? Some more examples from the scriptures, maybe? Can I think of it? Yes. Oh, with the installation of Radha Lanjaneeswar and things shaking and... Any other examples from the scriptures you can think of? There was a time Krishna gave an order. He said, go do this. And they did it and it didn't work. They came back and said it was a failure. The cowherd boys, right. And under Vrindavan Champu, Kavi Kanapur says, the boys said, how has nectar become salty? How can your infallible order not bear fruit? And Krishna said, oh, it's the way it is when you beg. But externally, that was a failure, wasn't it? Yes? What about when Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and the calves? Who had a failure in that lila? Somebody failed, not Lord Brahma. Somebody failed, and they were angry and baffled by their failure. Yes? Okay, Lord Brahma was bewildered, but there were some devotees in that lila who failed, and it said they were angry and frustrated and baffled by their failure. Yes. The cowherd men, they couldn't keep the cows on top of Govardhan Hill. How many of you have been to Govardhan Hill? Would you want to run down Govardhan Hill? That would be kind of dangerous, wouldn't it? Right? All these big boulders, and the cows were running with joined front and rear legs, the way you see the cows running in temperate climates when they're let out after the winter. Right? They were just racing down the hill, and the cowherd men, they said they failed to stop the cows. Now, in all these circumstances, though, was Krishna pleased? Was Krishna pleased with the cowherd boys? Yes? And didn't that serve to glorify the Brahmins' wives more? If they had just gone right to the Brahmins' wives, would they be glorified as much? And so many other things. It gave the Brahmanas a chance, right? Gave them some room for self-reflection later. It gave a whole lesson about the difference between devotion and ritualism. What about not being able to stop the cows? What did that show? What did the cowherd men's failures, how did that please Krishna? Well, they were actually pretty upset until they saw their sons. Yes! That the cows had so much love for Krishna that they were willing to overcome all obstacles. So sometimes obstacles and failures in our life and difficulties in our life is for us to reassess what's my motive. Is my motive to please Krishna, or is my motive to get the fruit? And sometimes it seems that Krishna withholds the fruit, so we have to say, wait, my purpose is to make Krishna happy. So looking at this, again, I'm not saying that we've looked at everything or looked at everything thoroughly. There may be a lot of other ways of responding. I think we've given some food for thought. In general, when materialistic people have an obstacle, like in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? All my enemies have been killed, and anyone who's my enemy in the future will also be killed. Now, I don't think that necessarily means literally, but I think the demoniac mentality is I'm going to neutralize all my obstacles. I'm going to blow them up. You know, don't get in my way. Anything that gets in my way, I'm going to destroy. And I've destroyed everything in the past, I'll destroy. The mentality of a materialist is very external. Let me destroy the obstacles externally. Let me get rid of this person. Let me move. Let me punish this person. Now, of course, sometimes an external response is warranted. There are some obstacles in our devotional life that can be solved by going to bed a half an hour earlier or moving a chair from one end of the room to the other. You follow what I'm saying? When you get a cut in your finger, you don't have to like be all psychoanalytical and a deep lesson is, you know, just put a bandage on it. So there are certainly certain obstacles when a simple external response may be valid. Yeah, it may be valid. Like we were saying, if it's something you can do, if you can have an external response to the obstacle, to get rid of the obstacle, and it's morally, ethically, spiritually, legally valid, well, go ahead and do it. Not a problem. But when that's not possible, then we want to go internally. Instead of just getting frustrated and angry and trying to force things and going to the, well, I'm just a victim of my circumstances. So we can ask, what is Krishna, what kind of response? Does Krishna want a little different response from me? Maybe a response of compassion, maybe a response of humility, maybe a response of patience. Yeah. Am I putting this out somewhere? Am I just getting back what I'm putting out? Is this a chance to have a different shelter, really have Krishna as my shelter? Is this a chance to show Krishna that I'm not a fair weather friend? And is this a chance to work moment by moment by moment for that satisfaction of making Krishna smile rather than some kind of fruit? And again, this nice quote, being pleased with the devotee, the Lord turns all of his material impediments into spiritual service. When we respond this way to our obstacles, it becomes part of our service. It becomes a source of happiness for us. So thank you very much. It's already a little bit after 8, but we can have just maybe till 8:15. If anyone has 10 to 9. Okay. I was thinking I would have to end at 8. No. Okay. Well, we could go to 8:30. I don't want to go past 8:30. We could go to 8:30. Anyone questions or discussions? Yes. That's one possibility. Okay, we talked about this the other day, so we'll repeat this a little bit. So your question is, I'm saying, don't just serve the organization separately from Krishna. And if the devotees are displeased with us, that probably means we have the wrong shelter. It's one possibility. Maybe they're displeased with us because we're acting like a moron. I mean, there's a number of reasons why they might be displeased with us. And you're saying we need to please the devotee. But we need to please the devotee with Krishna at the center. Not necessarily, no. There's a couple evidences for this. We brought one up the other day with Gadadhar Pandit. So Balavacharya had a commentary on the Bhagavatam, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not want to hear. And Balavacharya knew that Gadadhar Pandit was very mild and meek. And so he forced his way into Gadadhar Pandit's house. Now, in America, if someone forces their way into your house, you may just say, get out of here. But, you know, that wasn't the culture. And Balabhacharya was older. So Gadadhar Pandit didn't disturb him. He just came in and said, let me tell you my Bhagavatam commentary. And he just started reciting it. And Gadadhar Pandit felt very stuck. And he was praying internally. He said, the devotees are going to criticize me, but Lord Chaitanya will know my heart. And the devotees did criticize him. But Lord Chaitanya knew his heart. Another example, of course, is with Hriday Chaitanya and Shamananda. When Shamananda had that vision of Srimati Radharani, and Srimati Radharani gave him a new name and gave him Tilak, and his guru was angry with him for quite some time until everything was rectified. So, no, not necessarily. Not necessarily. In fact, even with Krishna, so the example is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Mother Yasoda, by taking care of the milk on the stove, Krishna became angry. But because her intention was to please Krishna, it's bhakti. And Kamsa fighting with Krishna, Krishna enjoyed the fighting, but it wasn't bhakti because his intention wasn't to please Krishna. So the point is whether your intention is to please Krishna. That's the point. And even when you're serving the devotees, the intention should be to please Krishna. If you're trying to please the devotees separate from Krishna, you know, ultimately everybody's a devotee. Any time we're trying to please anyone or anything separately from Krishna, that is delusion. I should be trying to... Okay, look. Think of it like this. Have you ever talked to somebody, but you weren't really trying to do anything with them? You were just trying to impress somebody else with how you were talking to the first person? Anybody ever did that? Just something like that. Like, sometimes people worship God to try to impress people. Maybe we've done that too. Maybe we've tried to do something for Krishna just to impress the other devotees. You know, I'm going to sit in the temple and chant my rounds without moving, and everyone will think I'm a great sadhu. or something like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So you want to reverse it. Deal with other people so Krishna will smile. Deal with everything so Krishna will smile. This is what Kunti talked about when she said, sever my tie of affection to my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vishnus, but they're devotees. Why doesn't she want to serve the devotees? What is she talking about? And Prabhupada says in that purport that seeing in the sunlight is seeing and seeing in the darkness is not seeing. And real relationships are soul to soul via the super soul. When we make everyone, when we do our best, when we have the intentions of making everyone happy, which we can never make everyone happy all the time. Even some people are angry with Krishna. But if our intention is to make them happy so Krishna will be happy, not separately. And the same with the institution. If one is thinking, well, I'm going to dedicate my life to ISKCON and I'm going to be really loyal to ISKCON, and that way the temple presidents and the GBC and all the devotees will treat me nicely and with respect. And you know what? They might not. No matter how loyal and how dedicated you are, am I telling the truth here? It might not. And then you get, if your response to that is bitterness and anger and frustration and disappointment, then you can understand that the reason you're doing it was not correct. If a person's thinking, if I'm loyal to ISKCON, ISKCON will take care of me. You know what? It might not. Whatever ISKCON is. I mean, we're all ISKCON, frankly. But if I'm serving ISKCON to please Krishna, and Krishna will take care of me, you know what? Krishna will take care of me. That's for sure. How he may take care of you is interesting. He doesn't always take care of you quite according to your plan. You know, it's not quite like that. Do you understand the difference? It's sometimes hard to see the difference because the weed can look like bhakti, and you can think, well, I'm so loyal, but what am I so loyal to? Where do I have my shelter, and who am I trying to please, which are related but a little different. Where's my shelter, and what's my motive? And it can be very subtle. And the way you can tell is what's your response when things don't work out. Does that make sense? Okay. If the response is, like Prabhupada said, some people might get really angry with me. But Prabhupada said, my godbrothers just brought me compression, depression, and repression, but I was not a man to be discouraged. Srila Prabhupada did not respond to that by saying, oh, forget about this. Why did I dedicate myself to my Guru Maharaj's mission? Look how they treated me. Do you follow what I'm saying? It wasn't his response. His response was, I'm doing this for Krishna and for my Guru, and Krishna's taking care of me, and my Guru is pleased with me. And even if other people may criticize me or be envious of me, you know, that's unfortunate. It's not that we're just like, oh, whatever. But it doesn't go to the heart. So even if everybody just brings you compression, repression, and depression, you can still not be a person to be discouraged if you have the right shelter and the right motive. And those things can be signposts to say, what's your shelter? What's your motive? You know, often we'll respond to those things by saying, there's something wrong with them. Which there might be. But that's perhaps not our business. Unless there are children or something. Yeah. But it can also be, okay, well maybe there's something wrong with them. Whatever may be wrong with them. Is that okay? Yes, Jen Mustard.
One time I was in a high state of distress, and I was at Govardhan, and Prachasarji Maharaj just happened to show up at the right time, and he gave me a Shastric blessing that opened a whole dimension of reality in terms of how to deal with distress. And this is, I don't know if you're aware, but it's 1.9.19, Bhagavatam. That's in the Sushis, first stand for ninth chapter, 19th verse. And in the purport, his usually lying on his bed of arrows and helping Yudhishthira deal with his mental disturbance. And Here in the purport, Prabhupada, he describes different bhavs that Krishna has with his devotees. He describes with Yashoda Mai, loving, Vatsalya Ras, incredible depth in mentioned the Damodar Leela. Then, the Sakya Ras, Arjuna, and how he became Arjuna's chariot driver. Mentioned Sukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras. And then he says something really kind of mind blowing. He says, and the tribulations a devotee undergoes is another transcendental bhav of the Lord. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, says that if Krishna puts a devotee in distress, he deepens his devotion. So, you know, it kind of changes the whole picture when you actually see this is Krishna's loving hand reaching into my life and somehow I'm helping you. It might not be clear right away. Maybe I'm putting it out or there's something, yeah. You know, whatever it is, but it's arranged out of love. I might be open to the cause of it because the actual Krishna is arranging. He's sanctioning the whole thing out of love.
That was the example I gave with the pencil. You can say that the child is causing it by holding their pencil improperly in the first place, but the teacher is responding out of love for the child. And the child sees this as an obstacle, sees it as a problem. Why is the teacher harassing me? But actually, the teacher is trying to help the child for their benefit. Thank you. Did you have something that you wanted to say? Somebody else? Yes.
In response to kind of what Ramasi was saying, there's, and I need to find out exactly where it's before, but he was also thinking of before, he says, for the devotee, there is no suffering. And then he says it again, he says, for the real devotee, there is no suffering, because he always sees that it's Krishna arranging that situation. So, you know, example of the pencil, you know, if the student actually sees the teacher is as loving them and trying to help them, then even if it is frustrating inside, they'll kind of look for love instead of the stress.
Well, I think one of the problems with this, though, is sometimes it's hard for us to understand how it could possibly be loving. It's hard for us to find the meaning behind the pain. We're able to deal with a lot of difficulty if we understand that it has meaning. The difficulty that we really, really struggle with is it just seems to be purposeless. And it just seems to be an impediment. So that's why I've looked at possible meanings behind it. What could Krishna's purpose be? You follow what I'm saying? So if you just start taking as a given, there's some beneficent purpose here. I'm dealing with Suridam Sarvabhutan. I'm dealing with my best friend here. And there's something that's beneficial for me. Well, what could it be? So these are some of the things it could be. It could be a way of getting me to do something I really need to do, getting me to have some shift that I really need that I'm just not going to do otherwise. It could be getting me to face something in myself, some way that I'm harming myself that I'm just not aware of. And it could be a way for me to deepen my relationship with Krishna in ways that, again, I just don't seem to be aware of unless they come to me in that form. Because the unfortunate thing for many of us is unless things come to us in that kind of, it kind of gets our attention and we have to deal with it. But by the way, if we'd like to have more of our learning and our relationship not be in ways that are difficult, I mentioned one way is you can try to listen for the flute and the name instead of waiting for the stick. And you know, I see that Krishna does try to tell us in very gentle ways. He tries to reform us in very gentle ways. But it's a question of whether or not we respond. So many times the difficulties come because we're just not responding to the gentleness. But it needs to be fixed. And another thing I found, and this is really from another seminar on forgiveness, which I'm not going to get into that much in depth, but wishing the best for others. So I kind of understood the essence of forgiveness is may you learn happily. May you not have to suffer for whatever you did to me. May you learn your lesson joyfully. Like Prahlad says, please liberate my father. He says, my father committed horribly sinful things to me. Prahlad did not say, oh, my father didn't do anything, it was just cool. He didn't say that. He said, my father committed grievous offenses against you and against me. Please liberate him. So what does that mean? Please liberate him. Please rectify him. Please give him that empathy. Please give him the things that he needs to be rectified without him having to undergo punishment. So if we don't want to be, if we don't want Krishna to deal with us in a way that's heavy, then we have to desire for our so-called enemies that they can learn joyfully. Because Suniti says to Dhruva, whatever you desire for others also is what you get back. So if we think, you know, that person committed some terrible thing, maybe a really horrible thing, let them suffer, let them suffer. Rather, let them learn without suffering. They may still have to suffer, but that's not our intention. Do you understand what I'm saying? Our intention should be, I would prefer, I have no desire to see them suffer. I desire to see them rectified. No desire to see them suffer. So these are ways in which we can attract to ourselves having these loving things in a way that don't appear to us as suffering. Even if they may appear externally to others like that, they don't appear to us as suffering. But thank you very much for that. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Two things. One, when you mentioned tolerating things in the proper way, and I find that it helps me to remember when I think I'm tolerating someone else's stuff. They're tolerating.
They have to tolerate my stuff, right?
Yeah. And then the other thing is about seeing the obstacles as a test to see whether or not I'm Krishna's fair weather friend. So if I see that I'm doing this thing and there's motivation, so then what's the next step to get past that?
So if I see that my motives are wrong?
Yeah.
I find just personally it really helps for reading and hearing, especially with other devotees. Because then we become attracted to really loving Krishna. It becomes attractive to us. Especially we hear about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees and these sweet exchanges of love and particularly the much chitam magata paran bodhiyam tasprasram katayan tasciman nicham tisham ticharaman ticha. We talk about Krishna's pastimes and dealings and qualities among the devotees. And I really wish we would do a lot more of that. It's funny when they asked me what seminars I wanted to give her. I wanted to give all Leela seminars and they asked me to do these ones instead. But I really like that. I really like that. When I find when the devotees talk about how wonderful Krishna is and Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's qualities and Krishna's forms, we start becoming attractive. And then we see the other as very unattractive. And the idea of working for our own self and worrying about our own self and our own reputation or our own facility or, you know, always thinking to protect ourselves, whatever. It becomes very unattractive by comparison. There's a night we were talking about the cows, how Krishna calls his cows. There's a nice poem Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes in Sharanagati about being one of Krishna's cows. And I don't think he's writing literally, because of course he reveals that he has a identity as Kamala Manjari Gopi. But he writes about, I'm just going to be one of your cows, Krishna, and we go to the Jamuna. You know, I'm going to drink the water and I know you're going to save me from the poison. And he's going on and on through all these pastimes, how Krishna takes nice care of his cows. Now, and when you read this song of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, it's very hard to read this song of Bhakti Vinod Thakur without thinking, I have a really nice to my Krishna's cows. Krishna's come and pet me, and talk to me, you know. And you become attracted. Does that make sense? You become attracted. That I'd like to enter into Krishna's pastimes. Right, we're reading now the pastime of Banasura, and when I was just in Gainesville, they were reading that thing. They read the whole chapter. They had two chapters in one morning when I was there. And this whole fight between, you know, Shiva and Krishna and Bana and Kartikeya is there on his peacock. I mean, and you read, wouldn't you like to be there? Wouldn't that be cool? And we get attracted. I'd like to enter into these pastimes. I'd like to see these pastimes. I'd like to be that kind of devotee. I'd like to have the, and it awakens this desire in the heart for these sentiments. So that's the real cure. When Krishna, when we see, oh, you know, the reason I have these obstacles is I have the wrong shelter, or I have the wrong motive, or I'm just a fair weather friend. It's not so we can get depressed over it. It's not so we can go, oh, I'm just and we can't conquer Maya by ourselves. Divyesha Gunoya Mala Maya Duratya. It's not possible, you know, I mean, forget it. But if we become attracted to Krishna, then Maya just retreats. She's not very interesting anymore. She's not very interesting. There's no lesser really in illusion, and there's so much in Krishna. So that's the main one. Go deep into attraction to Krishna. Don't try to do it through piety, by being a good person. That's karma yoga. Don't try to do it through just detachment and philosophy. That's jnana yoga. Don't try to do it through just controlling the senses. That's jnana yoga. Do it through bhakti. And Krishna is so attractive. He's so attractive. He's so wonderful. So many varieties. He's got some pastime that'll attract somebody, you know. If you're not attracted by one pastime, you'll be attracted by a different one. We all have our pastimes that will attract us. Is that all right? We'll have to do it. You know, we have to do it. We have to make time in our busy day, and we have to make space in our heart. We have to make some effort. And it can be as simple as listening to a proper lecture, an audiobook while you're taking a shower. It can be that simple, you know, or putting on a lecture, an audiobook when you're in your car. It can be, you know, you see another devotee and tell them some nectar you read in the book, in Prabhupada's books, instead of talking about something, you know, external in the world. It's a simple thing. Yes. Hi, Krishna.
Sometimes I guess, you know, we're conditioned from the very beginning of, you know, when we take birth, you know, we know that, you know, when we want something, we try for it. And then when we have the capacity to say it, then we ask for it. And as we grow older, you know that, you know, we can ask our mom or our dad, you know, when we need something. When we go spiritually, you know, when we, I initially felt Krishna consciousness, I thought I could approach Krishna whenever I needed something. Even, you know, my vending machine services, I get a coin, I get something. But later on, you know, I start to develop a relationship with him. But now, sometimes obstacles are there, you know, but then when you're in it, you don't realize your motives, you know, what you want to do, is this virtually going to benefit me or not benefit me. We don't know. We don't know the answers to those questions. Is, when you are in that situation, is it, I wouldn't use the word appropriate, but I don't have any other word either. Appropriate to approach Krishna for that. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what he wants. I would love it if the kids came up to me and said, well, what's this thing on my pencil for? Of course, I already told them that. That's what I wanted them to do. Why are you making me read this book? Why are you making me study this text? I want them to ask. I mean, generally you tell them. But maybe they're not listening. Of course. That's exactly what Krishna wants you to do. Exactly. How can I use this to serve you? What changes do you want in me? Am I treating other people this well? Do I have the wrong shelter? Do I have the wrong driver? Have I been a fair weather friend? Are my desires off? Please help me and show me. And if I'm not ready to see right now, give me the courage and the faith so that I can see. Show me. Show me the truth about myself. I remember once speaking to a very large audience, and I said, how many of you are ready to go to God and say, please show me the truth about myself? And nobody raised their hand. So that's what it is. Please, Krishna, show me the truth about, you know, I want truth. Param Satyam Dhimahi. I want the absolute truth. I come to this Hare Krishna movement because I want the absolute truth. Okay. Would you like to start with yourself? Nothing. So, you know, if you go to Krishna and say, please show me the truth about myself. If you're ready, he'll show you right then and there, or very soon. I mean, yeah. If you say, how will he show you? He's very clever. He has infinite ways. And if you're not ready, you know, you can say, and if I'm not ready, please make me ready. Please prepare me. Please give me the strength so that I can see it. You know, sometimes a friend comes to you and says, you know, what's my problem? And you can see the problem, but you know they're not ready to see it. Has that ever happened to you? You know, you kind of try a little bit and you say, well, I had a friend do this to me. She said, what's my problem? And I knew her very well. And so I said, well, you don't have any problems. And she kept pushing and pushing, you know, what's my problem? What's my problem? And I said, look, you really don't have any problems. Anyway, she pushed and I finally said, well, you know, you don't have any, really don't, but it's just a very small, it's really very insignificant. If you had a problem, it would be this. And then she was angry at me for the next, like, 3 weeks. And I was getting all these nasty emails, and how dare you say that that's my problem? So, so we don't want to be like that with Krishna. You know, we don't want to go to Krishna, and, well, what's my problem? And he'll tell you, what do you mean? That? I know. So we would go ask Krishna, you know, show me the truth about myself. And if you don't think I'm ready, get me ready. Give me courage, mostly courage. Like Lord Ramachandra says, that if anyone prays to me for courage, I immediately award courage to that person. You need courage. That Krishna's going to hold my hand. He's going to show me what, but he's going to be right there with me. And he's going to be holding my hand and say, okay, this is what we need to address. And he's going to help me. He's going to take away the problem. I don't have to take away the problem. I just have to face it and ask him to take it away. Of course you can. That's what he's waiting for you to do. Like Prabhupada says, Krishna wants to talk to you. He's waiting for you to want to talk to him. Do you understand? Please be very careful. Sometimes what we're really asking Krishna is, Krishna, I want to hold on to my problem, but I just don't want to suffer anymore. Sometimes that's actually what we're asking. I don't really want to fix anything in me. I don't really want to change anything in me. Just tell me what I can do to get rid of the suffering. Whereas the real response should be, I'm willing to suffer for as long as you want me to, Lord, for this thing, but help me fix my heart. Isn't that what you'd want if somebody had offended you? So if somebody had really offended you, and they came to you and they said, look, just show me what I can do to fix this so I don't have to suffer anymore. Is that very, do you feel very enlivened by that? No. Right. And if they come to you and say, tell me what I did wrong. And you say, well, you did this and this and this. Okay, now that I see I did wrong, okay, now can you take away the punishment? Is that, do you feel very encouraged by that? I had this with one kid. One kid was saying to me, you know, okay, will you let me do such and such? And I said, no. Well, why not? Well, because the last few times that you asked to do that, you know, you broke the thing, you didn't return it, you were irresponsible. Yeah, you're right. I can see I was irresponsible. Okay, what can I do to use it today? I said, nothing. There's nothing you can do to use it today. Well, what can I do? I said, you're going to have to prove to me that you're responsible for the next maybe like 2 or 3 weeks. Oh, but I want to use it today. I said, just the fact that you're telling me you want to use this today shows me that you haven't fixed anything. You follow? Now, let's say the kid said to me, however long you think that I have to go without using this thing, I'm willing to do that. And I'm going to just show you that I'm going to be responsible. Then you know what? Probably instead of 2 or 3 weeks, it would only be like 4 days. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's what we say, Satyanu Kampam Sukshamikshamana. The devotee says to Krishna, you know, Lord, I'm not asking you to take away the suffering. By the way, that is so hard to do. genuinely. It's easy to do that. Well, if I don't ask him to take away the suffering, then maybe that will manipulate him to take away the suffering. It's really hard to do that genuinely, especially if the suffering is very heavy. Now, okay, I'm not asking you to take away the suffering. I'm just asking to serve you and please you and be your devotee and be the kind of person that I really am and the kind of person you want me to be and the kind of person that will make me happy. And if I have to go on suffering forever for how I behave, well, that's fine. That's really the response of the devotee. And if one has a response like that, even if it's only, even if it's not 100% genuine, but some genuineness, Krishna will respond. He'll be so happy. He'll be really happy. Yes, Penny. Ah, the failure discussion, yes.
Did one say that the story of Arjuna before Kurukshetra is like the ultimate in the failure to success story?
Before Kurukshetra?
He was negotiating the two sides and failed.
Even Krishna failed, huh? That's interesting. Yeah. But we were thinking more in terms of we may see as obstacles where we can't get what we want. That's a kind of obstacle, especially I can't get what I want in service. And many times people come to me asking for help because, it seems that I should be able to have this facility for my service and it's not happening. I'm not getting this particular result. So I see there are many examples in the Shastra and in the lives of great devotees when they apparently do not get the result, even if it's a result in service. And one thing you can learn from that, like Krishna says to Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, happy, is to do that. When there is no fruit externally, one of the ways we can respond to that is to change what we call success. So instead of saying, oh, I'm a failure, because I didn't, can we control the fruit anyway? Can we do that? Do we have control over the fruit of our actions? No, a little bit, but not entirely, not very much. But what we can control 100% is my intention to please Krishna right now, and 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 define success like that. That my success is my intention to please Krishna right now, and right now, and right now. And I see that external failures, even in our service, can really act as an impetus for that. That sometimes if everything we do in service works out just great on an external level, we can become attached to the fruits of our work without realizing. And then we never get to this point that Krishna is talking about right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. But sometimes when Krishna makes the fruits fail, we can just wallow in it and be miserable, or we can say, well, wait a minute. How can I be happy when the fruits fail? Well, Krishna's still smiling. Ram still smiled at Jatayu. He was infinitely pleased with Jatayu. So it takes us to a different path. It's getting kind of late. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Tomorrow we have a very, very different topic. We have a topic mostly from the 3rd and 11th canto on liberation through sound, a very amazing way to think about what is attentive and deep chanting.